Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Jazz singer David Bassi has been called the unbelievable combination of Mel Torme, John Hendricks, and Al Jarreau. The Pitch once said he adds a unique twist to his phrasing that makes him more than the sum of his influences. David Bassi is all that, and he's also just one terrific entertainer. He's a founding member of the 12th Street Jump Cast. That's the program heard here on KCUR at midnight Saturday nights. He's played with Jay McShann and Phil Woods, and he has a new disc on the way called Uptown, and he's right here with us now. And so good to have you, David, and so sorry it's been too long to get you on this show.
It's great to be here.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to be on the show. It's lovely.
Oh, it's great to have you. Let's play a track from David Bassi's new disc. This is Something Fried from the disc Uptown.
Well, there's a party here tonight, and the band is out of sight, and they can bring you to your feet, and you can eat some of the best food you can find. I'd like to order something fried with mashed potatoes on the side, and bring the same thing for my date. Pile up the plate and give me some of that fancy wine. Since the band is on a break, I have another steak, but this time put some gravy on the top for me. I'll bring it right away, because the kitchen closes at midnight, and that's when the band begins. The joint is jumping to the beat. Most everybody's on their feet.
I guess you like your fried food.
You would think so from that song,
yes,
wouldn't you?
Yes, you would.
Actually, it's Mike Melvoin who wrote the song,
yeah,
who wrote several songs about fried food. One song called "Are You Gonna Eat That?" that him and Phil recorded on another album, and then of course Something Fried. And we spent a lot of time at barbecues when he used to come back to town, and eating crazy food. You know,
well, you sound pretty good for a young man.
Who, me?
You?
You know, I've been at this a while.
I know you have.
5 years or so.
Yeah,
you know,
at least something like that, right? Uh-huh. Well, if there's a headline out of this new disc, it's that you've got the great Phil Woods playing with you on sax. How did you pull that off?
Well, there's a town in Pennsylvania called Delaware Water Gap, and it's just across the Pennsylvania border. If you come out of New York on the George Washington Bridge and get on I-80, go about an hour, you're in Delaware Water Gap. And back in the early 70s, Bill Goodwin, the drummer, took Phil Woods out to Delaware Water Gap to meet his sister, Jill. And they were married and subsequently lived there. Bill Mays, the pianist, lives there. Bob DeRoe, the vocalist. Keith Jarrett.
Wow.
So every other person, it's like 200 people in the town, and 150 of them are artists.
Wow.
Kim Parker is there,
yeah.
Charlie Parker's daughter.
Yeah.
And it's a great place. And there's a 150-year-old inn that's been a jazz bar for over 40 years. And at the time, the place was run by a piano tuner. So we showed up to play, and we were going to rehearse. And Bill said, no, we can't rehearse, because the owner's a piano tuner, and he just tuned the piano. So, you know, we're going to save it for the performance tonight. We're going to go up to Phil's house to rehearse. So we went to Phil's house, and Phil was watching a ball game, and we were playing the songs. And every time I would sit down on the couch with Phil, he'd say something else. He'd say, "Where'd you get that tune?" I said, "Melvoin wrote it." "Really? Bring me a chart. You know, honey, copy this." So his wife was copying the charts as they were rehearsing the songs. And when we went outside afterwards, he sat down at the piano and he was playing the songs. And the next morning we got a call that said, Phil wants us to come up and sit on the porch for some reason. So when we went up there, he said, "Let's get these songs out. Let's start playing them. I want to play them with you." And he came and played with us that night, played the whole night. And he made us an offer. He said, "You know, I want to record this music, and I'll give you a better price than I gave Billy Joel."
That's a story. That's a real story.
Well,
it's
a long story, but it's a story, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so the association began then, and I gather it's continued since.
Yeah. You know, I had actually met Bill. I actually met Phil in 1986 when Bill Goodwin produced an album for the City Light Orchestra when they were in town at the Signboard Bar. But it took 20 years. I mean, I met Phil probably 15 or 20 times in between that time, but he had never heard me sing. You know, so I kept meeting him, and he kept saying, "Hi, I'm Phil Woods." And I said, "I know, I'm David Bassi." And he's like, "Never met you before. See you later, kid." And then we show up at his house, and I start singing, and he's like, "Hey, you're kind of good, you know?" So
yeah.
It's like, yeah.
Well, you call this disc Uptown. Why?
Uptown, because of the song Uptown.
Okay.
Mike Melvoin, who recently passed early March, his son, Jonathan, was a member of the band Smashing Pumpkins and passed away in 1996. It was quite an ordeal when he passed away. Mike and I had been working together. We worked together for 20 years. I produced several albums for Mike, probably 20, 25 albums we were part of, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But we had been working together a while at the time, and Mike quit playing completely. Being Jewish, he grew a beard. He sat Shiva for a while. It continued on and on and on. There's a bassist named John Hurd,
mm-hmm.
And John Hurd and I said, you know, we've got to do something. Mike's just—he's just sitting around. He's not playing the piano. He's not doing anything. We went by the house and said, "Hey, that's—you know—I'll play drums. John will play bass. That's play."
Yeah.
And eventually, he got into it. And then a company called, a record company from England called Mike and said, "We'll give you X amount of dollars for every track you write. We want you to write tributes to all your favorite songwriters." And Mike wrote 25 or 30 songs. He just really got into it then. He wrote one for Monk. He wrote one for Duke Ellington. He wrote one for Chick Corea. He wrote one for Red Garland. He wrote one for Count Basie.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody he liked, he wrote a song, Ahmad Jamal. And so then it became making these songs. They were recorded as a solo piano pieces, and a lot of them ended up on this record, the one called Uptown that we'll hear probably later in the show, was a tribute to Duke Ellington.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
So it sounds like things just sort of evolve with this thing.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the way jazz is.
Yeah, I was going to say.
You know, I mean, it's like one change, one note, one word, one little nod from somebody. I mean, I know that from working with Ahmed Al-Adin for 25 years. Just a look over his glasses and something's funny. You know, I mean, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Something's funny. Mm-hmm. You know, and you can analyze that for the next 15 years. You know, oh, Al-Adin thinks something's funny there.
What a great loss he was, too. I mean,
oh, man.
You miss him. You miss seeing him play.
I think about him every day.
Yeah. Well, how is this disc different, David, from other CDs you've put out? What's unique about this one?
Well, it's a great band. Mm-hmm. It was recorded in New York. It's the first one that I've recorded in New York as a vocalist. Most of the songs are original. A lot of the songs, it took me quite a while before Mike would allow me to sing them in public.
Mm.
One track, it was 8 years before he allowed me to sing it in public.
Because?
He said he got to grow into it.
Oh, that's interesting.
You know, so this is a lifetime. It's a lifetime of work. You know, people don't realize. It's funny how jazz works, that you can get up on the stage and like last night, I was telling you I had seen Sean Jones in Topeka.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in a classical concert. The Sunflower Festival is still going on. A free festival, a beautiful concert, 1,200 people, a beautiful hall, and Sean Jones. And they announced, they said, this is one of the great quartets. You're going to hear string quartet type music from a jazz quartet. Well, they get up on the stage and they improvise for, a regular length of time. Well, that's what we do in jazz. But it takes that lifetime. You bring that lifetime with you when you get on that stage. He spent, 8 years with Wynton Marsalis in the Lincoln Center Orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he can play the trumpet.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I think one of the issues is that you guys tend to make it look so easy. It's sort of like writing a newspaper story. We write those stories for, seventh grade readers, in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to do that, but people read a story and they think, it's easy to put that together. It just reads so easily. It's nothing mm-hmm. really complicated about
mm-hmm.
it. And it's like what you do on stage in the same way, I guess. You make it look pretty easy.
Yeah, that's part of it, isn't
it?
Yeah,
I guess that is.
You know,
but people
like,
don't appreciate it as much, I guess, is my point.
You know, it's like buying a car that's practical and good, you know, as opposed to buying a car that's just a really great car that everybody's going to say, wow, that's a blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
And it's a status car. But another car is going to be like, it's just a plain car, but it'll run for 300,000-500,000 miles. You know, yeah. That's kind of how jazz is. I mean, you look at careers, like you look at Jay McShann, you look at Claude Fiddler Williams. Claude Fiddler Williams was the original guitarist with the Count Basie Orchestra. He left the band in 1936, you know, so he played with the band. He played and recorded until maybe 2006.
Oh, yeah.
So he had a 70-year career after he left the Basie Orchestra.
After you left the Basie
Orchestra. So that's what I'm looking at. I've been at this a while, but I'm just a kid, you know, in jazz. I can go on and on and on, right?
Yeah. Did you think some
right?
of that...
You didn't answer that, right?
Well, yeah, of course. Yes, absolutely, David.
Yes.
Well, do you think some of, you know, that original Kansas City jazz sound, I'm thinking of Scamps, I'm thinking of Jay McShann, I mean, some of that has left us now and has left us forever, I guess, in a sense. Am I right about that?
Well, there's certain people in Kansas City who fly that flag.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. One is Jim Mayer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
One is Tim Whitmer.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Kevin Mahogany is one.
Mm-hmm.
The singer, to an extent, Karn Allison flies that flag.
Mm-hmm.
Bobby Watson came in and picked up the whole darn army and said, come on, go this way.
But those guys who came from that era, they have really sort of passed on now. And I'm old enough now to sort of remember it and sort of recognize in some ways what we've lost. I know people are filling the gaps, but something has been lost here.
Aladdin, when he was five, used to walk down the street, actually sneak down the street. His mom didn't want him to, but he'd sneak down the street to hear Jay McShann rehearse in a garage.
There you go.
You know? So Aladdin was always considered him a second-generation jazz musician himself. Mm-hmm. Laverne Barker, who we played with in the City Light Orchestra, was a first-generation Kansas City jazz musician. And when we went to New York the first time, Andy Kirk came to hear us, and also Benny Goodman came to hear us. And so those were first-generation jazz musicians to us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, but who was Benny Goodman's first-generation jazz musician?
Well, right.
You know?
But do you buy the idea that we've lost something or not?
I think that it's always becoming new. It's always changing, and it's always growing. And you take a little bit of that with you.
Wherever you go.
But you can't bemoan the fact that these people are gone. You have to celebrate the fact that the music goes on and that they live through the music.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How healthy is the Kansas City jazz scene right now, David?
Well, you know, I look at it as like an ocean that ebbs and flows. It's some days it seems like there's nothing happening. And lately it seems more and more like there is absolutely, you know, pretty much, I mean, I wouldn't say absolutely nothing, but it's hard to find something on a Tuesday night at 11 o'clock that's cool or 12 o'clock. It's hard to find anything after 10 o'clock on a weeknight that's happening. Well, that's not just a nightclub or a performance space closing, you know, which we've had some recently close and celebrated that they closed in the press and so on. But you know, the music lives on.
Mm-hmm.
The music doesn't go away. It continues on. Like the bumper sticker, the big bands are back. You know, well, where'd they go? where were they?
Yeah.
How come they're coming back?
Yeah.
They didn't really go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
They just, you know, Harling's on a Tuesday night at 11:30. There's a swinging big band up there, Clint Ashlock's big band.
Yeah.
And everybody in the band pretty much is under 30 years old. And they're playing brand new music. Clint Ashlock is a great leader of a big band, and you know, drinks are reasonably priced, and there's no cover charge, and the band's playing only because one thing: they love it.
Yeah.
And the second thing is they love Clint.
You know, I come at this obviously just from the vantage point of being a fan and a great fan. I'm just enthralled with this music, but
I do too.
Well, sure, but it strikes me that in the last year or two that, in some ways, people have been saying for a long time that jazz is in trouble, jazz is dying. I get all that, and it lives on, and I get all that. But you do get a sense that the screw has turned a little bit in the last 6 months or a year and a half, with more and more people beginning to say, man, this, it just doesn't seem to be carrying on in the same way. The commercial vitality of it is being drained almost by the week, it seems like. At least that's a sense you pick up from reading blogs and reading Downbeat and reading all kinds of stuff.
Well, but it changes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in my current band, Joe Cartwright and I, who, as I said, we played together for 5 years now, then we have Steve Lambert on the saxophone. We have Herman Mahari on the trumpet. Jason Godot on the trombone.
Great players.
Brian Stever on the drums. Ben Leifer on the bass.
Some really young guys.
These guys are, you know, all fairly young, but they can play. Mm-hmm. And they can play for one reason. Well, they can play for two reasons. One, they're great musicians. Two, they went through the program here at UMKC Bobby Watson. And they went from being pretty good musicians to being world-class pros, because Bobby Watson came back to Kansas City and said, this town is worth my time. This history in Kansas City is worth my time. Yeah. We invented modern jazz in Kansas City. Mm-hmm. We took the music from two beat to four on the floor, as they say, you know. Mm-hmm. We did a lot of things to jazz that weren't done in New Orleans and weren't done in Chicago and weren't done in New York that people in those cities know about. People in Paris know about, people around the world. When you say, hey, I'm a musician from Kansas City, oh, would you like to set in with us?
Mm-hmm.
Don't matter. We know you can play. Yeah. You're from Kansas City.
And that still lingers. That reputation endures.
Absolutely. So so musicians, they leave, they come back, they leave, they come back. It's an ebb and a flow. You know, when in the 38, when the clubs started closing in Kansas City and everybody thought it was over, and the story goes that there was the Joe Turner and Count Basie were playing at Spirituals to Swing with Benny Goodman at Carnegie Hall, and a telegram came in, 50 clubs have closed, don't come back to Kansas City.
Mm. Is that a true story?
That's a true story. I heard it from I got it from Ragtime to Bebop from Chuck Addicks.
Well, there you go.
I consider him an authority.
I think that's a very good place to go. Hey, if you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We're visiting with David Bassey, the great jazz singer. Let's play some more new music from his disc Uptown. This track is titled "Like Jazz."
Jazz. You talk like jazz, in a whisper kind of gruff, like a hipster hanging tough, like jazz, yeah, jazz. And your smile is jazz, your style, pure jazz. A 52nd Street, in fact, hopping clubs with all the cats who like jazz. Like you're the last of a breed, and you know it. People say it every time you play. Well, your life on every stage, swinging nights and lazy days, too late to change those evil ways. 'Cause you love like jazz, close enough for sweet jazz. Yes, you'll love him on the run, kind of improvised and young, like jazz, like jazz.
Man, I don't want to ruin this show by talking, which is what we're going to do here. That's something. Who's playing on that track? Tell us.
Well, it's basically Phil Wood's band
mm-hmm.
that I think they got together in 1972. Mm-hmm. Steve Gilmore is the bassist, and Bill Goodwin is the drummer, and Phil, and then Mike Melvoin on the piano. There's a long, long history. Mike Melvoin and Bill Goodwin played together from the early 1960s when Mike moved to Los Angeles, 1962.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Goodwin Sr. was a radio announcer in Los Angeles and has a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. And Bill grew up next door to Bing Crosby,
wow.
which is an odd thing. Yeah. It has some great stories about growing up with Bing Crosby's kids next door and Bing coming out with the pipes saying, hey, you kids,
watch
settle
it.
Down.
Yeah, 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 exactly. That'd be cool. Is this disc out yet?
This disc was released on May the 22nd. It's available for download. It's available iTunes everywhere. It's a CD baby, and there's a direct link on my website, which is davidbasse.com, B-A-S-S-E.
You know, you typically wear a white fedora when you perform. That's become something of a trademark for you, David. Where did that come from?
I played at a country western bar up north of the river that became a strip bar called Diamond Jim's, was it? Diamond Joe's?
You're looking at me like I'd know something
well,
like that. Yeah,
I wouldn't admit it either. But Shoto Inn, it was called, years ago.
Okay.
And Ron Schoonover, who started the Phoenix and several sports bars that became very famous, had this place in the 70s. And when Cartwright and I first came to town, we played at the Ron Shoto Inn for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Kenny, the football player, Kenny, I can't think of his name. Oh, gosh. But anyway, it was a great place. It was full of people. It was a lot of fun. Thursday nights they had male strippers, and they didn't let any women in except the band and the strippers. It was a great thing.
What does this have to do with your fedora?
Oh, I don't know. It's just a long story. Anyway, they said at one point, you need to wear hats. You should wear cowboy hats. This is a country western bar. When they had that, what was that thing called? Urban cowboy?
Yeah.
Everybody's wearing cowboy hats.
Yeah.
And
I refused.
I completely refused. And so Joe Mag, who was one of the owners, he said, I've got a couple of hats from my uncle from Chicago, and I'll bring them in. And he had two great hats. One was kind of silver gray, and the other one was sort of purple.
Yeah.
And they were Chicago, authentic Chicago fedoras. They even had a little band that you could put through your buttonhole of your suit if it was windy. That was a Chicago trademark.
Oh, really?
I've learned a lot about hats over the years. But anyway, I started wearing these hats. They fit me perfectly. And I started wearing these hats then. We had a band called Cowtown Rangers. And it was Cartwright and a bassist named Batman
mm-hmm.
and John Blessy on the guitar.
And you just stayed with it over the years.
Well, yeah, it was this is my disguise. If I go out like this, people say, oh, I didn't recognize you without your hat.
Well, you walked down the hallway there. I was looking at you like, yeah, that's Bassey, right? Where's the hat?
I think that's David Bassey.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's become part of my – so that's my real identity is the hat, I guess.
You know, tell us about your singing style, because do you view yourself as this combination, as the one critic said, of Mel Torme, John Hendricks, and El Giro?
Wow.
Yeah.
Come on.
That's a load, isn't it?
I don't know. No, I pattern myself after Ernie Williams, if anybody,
mm-hmm.
The last of the Blue Devils.
Yeah.
And I was always a big fan of Big Joe Turner when I was a kid. When I started listening to the blues. Now, of course, as a kid, I listened to rock and roll. And so the music of the day, I started playing drums in 1966. So when I first came to Kansas City in 1974, I was working with a guitarist who said, oh, you like the blues. And I said, well, no, I don't really like the blues. I like John Lennon's music with the Beatles, and I like The Doors, and I like Cream. And they said, well, you need to listen to John Lee Hooker, and you need to listen to Howlin' Wolf, and mm-hmm. you need to listen mm-hmm. to Big Joe Turner. So that's what hooked me. And then the movie The Last of the Blue Devils was being produced in 1974.
Mm-hmm.
And going down to the foundation, Ernie Williams was one who would say, you know, let the kid play. Let the kid do this. Let him do it. He's okay. And then Laverne Barker really helped you know, helped to push my career forward by, you know, having the older guys, the scamps and so on, listen and say they would, give me that validation. Mm-hmm. Arthur Jackson was a member of the union then. Mm-hmm. He was on the union board. I was called before the board of the union because I came into town and I was playing every night of the week, but I didn't have a Kansas City Union card.
Ah.
And when I went before the board, they were going to give me an audition. And I would have had a symphony-style audition reading music and playing the snare drum to pass my audition. And Arthur said, wait a minute. The kid's playing 6-7 gigs a week. Let him play.
Yeah.
You know? And so that was kind of the ringing battle cry. Let the kid play. You know? And so that's how they just kept going. Every time I come to Kansas City, I get gigs. So I kept coming back, you know?
David Bassey's our guest. Our phone number here, 816-235-2888. Our email address, update@kcur.org. Let's go to some phone calls here. Jake from Kansas City, Missouri. Welcome, Jake. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. And Brother Bassey, I feel like I know you. You're a regular guest around the outside dinner table. We've got you on with the various sundry pieces of music you've done.
Uh-huh.
Going to touch base. Mike Melvoin did a gig with Dan Jaffe. Were you part of that?
I was a part of that. You're talking about the album called Playing the Word. And that's I guess it's a concept I thought up. Dan had not recorded his poems, and we put Dan in one recording studio and Mike in another recording studio, and I got to give them a signal so they could have some music, have some piano music, or have some poetry, and they put together the album Playing the Word. So I produced that album.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And they did a gig down at Jardine's and, you know, performed it live and got to meet Mr. Melvoin, and he was just the prince of a guy from everything I can tell. You know, spent half an hour with him having a drink after the set and just a real human being, a B-flat, you know.
And
great album, yeah. And
thanks, Jake,
for the music. Yeah, we sit on the deck and just be cool right before dinner and listen to you guys. So.
Nothing like it.
Jake.
Red hot. Okay, thanks.
Thanks for the call. Let's go out and take a break here. We'll go out with David Bassey's new disc, this track, You Won't Hear Me Say Goodbye. And just a quick reminder, he'll be playing on July 4th at the Major League Baseball All-Star Game. Jackson County's holding an appreciation celebration out at Longview Lake on the 4th of July. He'll be playing with Joe Cartwright, Kerry Strayer, and an 18-piece All-Star Jazz Band on July 4th. Here's David Bassey singing You Won't Hear Me Say Goodbye.
Eager and bold, consumed with desire. Then one day I looked and saw the dream that I'd been searching for, and without a second thought I fell in love. Once I was proud, naive and foolish, running around in total confusion. How I wish I could have been the man I know I should have been. But if memory serves me right, I said goodbye.
And welcome back to our second half. If you missed yesterday's talk with novelist Jeff Shera about the Battle of Shiloh, you'll find it, our weekend to-do list, and all of our previous broadcasts at kcur.org. Monday on the program, the anniversary of the Watergate break-in and a closer look at Deep Throat's personal agenda. Well, this hour we're visiting with David Bassey. That's the singer you just heard, the great Kansas City jazz crooner, performing off his new album, Uptown. It's now available right now. You know, David, do you have to take care of your voice, or do you just walk up to the mic and do it? How do you do it?
Well, I have some tricks, I guess.
Yeah. Do you? Like Marilyn May doesn't warm up. She just walks up and sings. Even today, she's in her mid-80s. She walks out and sings. No warm-up. Nothing. She just does it.
I don't really warm up.
You just go do it.
Yeah. I just go do it. It's no big deal. It's for the moment.
Yeah.
I learned a few things from the vocalist Les McCann. Mm-hmm. And he had me read a book by a teacher named Seth Riggs, and there's a book called Singing for the Stars, and I use some of the techniques in there sometimes if I feel a little under the weather, but most of the time I feel good. I'm healthy and I feel good. You know, I've had some allergies over the years and so on, but I think I've gotten past that.
You know, you're a founding member of the 12th Street Jumpcast. That's the show heard here on KCUR on Saturday nights at midnight. How did you get involved in that?
Well, Mark Edelman approached me, Mark from Theater League.
Yeah.
We're now on over 26 stations across the country.
That's amazing.
And grabbing more stations almost weekly.
And that show has that written all over it, it seems to me.
Well, it's like a Jazz Prairie Home Companion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's only on midnight here on KCUR. So some folks don't stay up till midnight, so they don't get to hear it. But it is available online, and it's available on the KCUR website all through the week. The last week, Holman, Hicks, and Hill, Rich Hill and Brian Hicks and Kathleen Holman doing like a Lambert Henriksen Ross thing. It was just off the hook good.
Yeah.
There's so many great – we have over 100 shows now.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And you perform it where now?
We perform it in a studio right now.
You've been bouncing around a little bit.
We're looking for a new home.
You know, you started out at 18th and Vine at the old foundation, which always struck me as what a perfect place.
It was perfect.
To do that, and then there were some problems, right?
It was perfect.
Just didn't work out.
Yeah, just didn't work out.
Yeah. How tricky is it doing a live radio show like that every week?
Well, what do you think?
Yeah, tell
you do
me
it every day.
But you got performers and jokes, and you're just there's all kinds of moving parts there.
It's just more moving parts. I mean, it's like a day when you have five or six people talking.
Yeah.
It's somebody has to direct traffic. That would be Joe Cartwright.
Yeah.
He's the one who directs traffic on the show. And then we have a couple of hosts, Pete Weber, Pearl McDonald, Nedra Dixon, who's a lovely singer and a Broadway star, has been come back to Kansas City because this is her home. And then Mike Warren and Ty Clark in the rhythm section. So it's a great band to start out with. Our guests are hip to the fact, hipped, if that's a word, to the fact that they've got to get down with the clock, you know, and Cartwright he cracks the whip and directs traffic, and boom, we make a show. So now it's like second nature. When we first did it, it was difficult.
And the hour really ends, hard. And everybody breathes a huge sigh of relief. Right?
Yeah, now it's like we'd rather do another one, you know, but do another one now, you know. But
tell us about playing with Jay McShann, the great Kansas City jazz and blues man. What was that like?
Well, you know,
I'm such a huge fan of that guy.
I am a huge fan of Jay McShann. We talked earlier in the show about how the music ebbs and flows. Sometimes there's not that much going on around Kansas City. And we all think, well, is it dead? Is it over? You know, 1938 was a rough time. The early 1980s was a real rough time for jazz. And I didn't play very much once I left the country western scene in 1980. I was fired from a country western band in 1980. And one of the things this guy told me in his rage when he was firing me was, you need to go find yourself a jazz band to play with. And I was like, you know, that's a dang good idea. Well, it took me 2 years to find a good jazz band to play with, and that was August, the first week in August of 1982. I wandered into City Light at 7425 Broadway, just on a fluke. It was my 10-year class reunion. I opted not to go to it so I could go to City Light and make, I think I made $25 in dinner with Pat Morrissey and Tim Whitmer, and it became 7 years. 5-6 nights a week. And Jay was one of the people who would fall by the place. And he wasn't doing that much then. I mean, we hired him for some gigs at a phenomenally low amount of money at that time. He was in his 50s or, you know, and just kind of banging around. Now, not in his 50s. He was older than 50s. But but Claude Williams came by and played and became a member of the band for a while. Carmel Jones was a member of the band for a while, who's just terrific.
Trumpet player. Yeah.
And Aladdin was one of those people who fell by. Laverne, who talked very slow, and he had bad teeth, so he always put his hand over his mouth. He said, you know, I got this guy, Aladdin, and, you know, he's pretty good. And we were like, okay, bring him out. So Aladdin came, and boom, he joined the band. And he got a lot of guff for it, you know, being in a mixed-race band and being in a band that played, you know, we wore our hats and did goofy stuff and played like almost swing music, you know. And his colleagues were like, what are you doing not playing real jazz, you know? Yeah. But he stuck by it. If you read his book, Aladdin, he says some wonderful things about those days, and it was phenomenal.
Yeah.
It was phenomenal. We played to 180,000 people at the first Spirit Fest, and we were live on Channel 9, I think.
Wow.
180,000 people. It was like, wow.
That's a lot of people.
And we were just a bar band from Waldo, man. It was cool.
Boom. Well, hey, I enjoyed having you, David.
Thank you.
So good to have you. Come back and see us again sometime
soon,
okay?
Absolutely.
Again, David Bassey's new disc is titled Uptown. This is the title track to that album. It's available right now.
At the top of old Manhattan, where the gals are silk and satin, we live the high life. After the sun goes down, with my baby and my top hat, there is nothing that can top that. We'll take the night and dance it away. Oh, say, there is a band that plays there till the early morning, hot swinging and sweet, with a trumpet that can make you move your body and your feet. There's a little bit of heaven on 147. That's where I'm going. That's where the night begins. My baby's there waiting for me.